Are you still there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. We got to go, though, actually. So
sure.
Thank you very much. That was, you heard Jacqueline Keeler, my monthly co-host, a writer and activist of Diné and Yankton Dakota heritage, who we've talked about where you can find her work. Thank you so much. This is Paul Rowland with Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO, KBOO Portland. And now I'm settled into the chair. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO for the News and Public Affairs strip. Coming right up on Political Perspectives, host Linda Olsen Osterlund welcomes Carl Dix to discuss the upcoming widespread and ongoing street protests of the Trump regime that will begin November 4th across the country. Call in and add your voice. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, the Dirtbag hosts a discussion of chippers, pineapple guava, and the Home Orchard Society's All About Fruit Show. All that's coming up on KBOO. And we start now with Linda and Mr. Dix.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Political Perspectives. This is Linda Olsen Osterlund, your host today, and I have for us a guest. His name is Carl Dix. He's a longtime activist. He actually started way back, well, I don't know if this is when you started, Mr. Dix, but you'll be able to tell me. Way back in the Vietnam War in 1970, he stood with five other men to refuse to go to Vietnam, and he served 2 years in Leavenworth for that stand. That was the largest group of inductees to refuse to go. And from there, he went on to all sorts of activism, including being part of the stop and frisk movement to stop the stop and frisk in New York. He also is a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party. He is one of the initiators of the organization I want to talk to you about today, which is the Refuse Fascism in the Name of Humanity. So welcome to KBOO, Carl Dix.
Thank you for having me on, Linda.
I'm really glad to have you on. I've seen you before. I saw you on Bill O'Reilly in January talking about the Trump regime and why we needed to throw it out and why it was fascist, along with Cornel West. That was quite an interesting news bit there.
Yeah, it was.
O'Reilly
got a little more than he bargained for.
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected to sort of turn across either. Well, I want to let the audience know that we are going to let you call in after the first half of this show. We're going to have about 20 to 30 minutes of interview, and then you're going to be able to call in with your questions and opinions. Talk about the movement that got started way back in December. I remember the call for it was put out and was on, you could go to it online and watch it online, which I did. So can you tell us about the beginning of this organization?
Yes, I mean, we initiated the middle of December, and we did that because we were looking at what Donald Trump's presidency was promising for not only for this country, but for all of humanity. I mean, a guy had built his political on pushing the notion that the first black president was illegitimate because he was born outside the country. He had bragged about sexual assault. He had, at that point, was beginning to talk about, we have nuclear weapons, why can't we use them? He promised a Muslim travel ban. He promised to target immigrants with deportation raids that would go way beyond what Obama, who set the record for deporting immigrants, had accomplished. And it struck us that this would intensify all of the horrors that this country inflicts on people here, but also around the world. But also that within this, what this was all part of was instituting and hammering into place a new form of rule, a fascist form of rule, one in which rights that people had fought for and won would be taken away, and people would be hammered down and forced to accept all this. And we felt that that was unacceptable for humanity, and that we had to come together to act to stop it. And that's what Refuse Fascism got pulled together around. There were probably a dozen and a half people who came together to initiate it, and I'm not going to try to go through
no,
all the names.
No, no, I had a list of their names.
Some of them.
But I was surprised to see how many mainstream celebrities were on that list. Deborah Messing, who's been taking some strong pokes against Trump on her new or their redo of the show Will and Grace. Not to send anybody to go watch that necessarily, but I have noticed that both she was a signer for the start of this organization, but that she seems to be trying to carry it out through her acting. There were others like Ed Asner, Rosie O'Donnell, but many names I wouldn't have expected to be on there had joined you in this call. And what is the call that you were starting with?
Well, we started with putting forward the necessity to drive this regime from office. And look, a lot of people were like, okay, we got to get ready for the next election, whether that's 2018 or 2020. And we said, no, you can't. For that.
Say that again. We lose a little bit of your words sometimes. So what did you say?
I said, you cannot wait for the next election, and that's how you're going to deal with this intensifying all these horrible attacks on people. And look, there are two very important and clear reasons for that. One is that already they're going to work on ethnically cleansing the voting rolls. This is going on in the Republican Party for decades now. And now with Trump's Commission on Voter Fraud, which he established because he says 5 million people voted against him illegally. They're actually working now on how can we take off the voting rolls a lot of the people who will vote against us. And they've already been doing this in states in different parts of the country.
Yes, you know, we've had Greg Palast on our radio station quite a bit, and he's been a supporter of KABU, and he has pretty much proven that they have used people's names to be able to knock tens of thousands of people off the rolls in different states using code for ethnicity by their last names, et cetera. And so, they've already been doing that.
You select the name of a Latino person, you select the name of a black person, and then every black or Latino person with that name gets knocked off the rolls and then has to put themselves back on. You cut down on early voting, which a lot of black churches have been using to get their membership to vote. And you even do things like you say a student ID is not legitimate ID to register to vote. Think about that. An ID issued by a college is not legitimate, but a card issued to you by the National Rifles Association is legitimate. And the real there is the National Rifle Association is a right-wing organization.
Yeah, very
it's
clearly.
Back up those kinds of forces, whilst young people, college students, tend to not vote for people with politics that Trump and the Republicans in general promote. So they're really working to cleanse the voting rolls. And then the other thing is we have to actually look at what kind of regime we're dealing with. Because, look, Adolf Hitler came to power by winning an election.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, Carl. You know, a lot of people say, boy, this is, you know, we've used the word fascist a little bit loosely in the past. And a lot of people say, well, now you can't really, you know, you can't really say fascist. You can say it's like fascism. I think an important part of the whole campaign is that this is fascism, that this is the beginning of it, and this is the way it goes. And I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about, well, what the heck is fascism, and why should we be concerned? I mean, yeah, he's bad. He's worse than the worst we've had in my lifetime, but is that fascism? Can you mete out a little bit what fascism is for our audience?
Okay, that's a very good question. That's a very good question because, you know, sometimes people do use the term loosely, and we are not throwing it around to say, oh, it's bad, let's call it the worst thing we can. What fascism is, and this is a definition that we run on the website that actually the Revolutionary Communist Party runs on the website, revcom.us, and it talks about fascism is the exercise of blatant dictatorship by the capitalist imperialist class ruling through reliance on open terror and violence and trampling on what were accepted as civil and legal rights, wielding the power of the government, and then mobilizing shock troops. And see, all of this is actually going on, and you have to understand that fascism goes through stages, works through steps. Like the pastor Niemöller said, in Germany, first they came for the communists, and many people didn't do anything because they weren't communists. Then they came for the Jews and didn't do anything because then they came for the trade unionists. Step by step, stage by stage, and this is already going on. They have already come for the Muslims and the immigrants. They are already working on enforced patriotism. I mean, witness Trump's talk about people who burn an American flag should lose their citizenship and be jailed. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has actually ruled flag burning is protected political speech. Well, they want to roll that back. And then you see that going farther with the targeting of the football players. The
NFL I wanted to bring that up. Tie this
for
in.
Taking a knee and saying that these people should be made to respect the anthem and respect the flag. This is very important to look at.
And now they've gotten the NFL to come out and say, we believe people, our players should stand for the American flag. And that, so it's managing to, you know, he's been yelling at him, beating on him, et cetera, the owners, managing to corral the owners to use them to be more repressive than they would have otherwise.
Yes, and see, it's very important to look at what's going on here, because here you have, beginning with Colin Kaepernick last year, a professional football player using the platform that he has as a celebrity athlete to protest the ongoing injustice targeting black people and other people of color in this society, and specifically the way in which police get away with murdering people. He does this. Other players take.
Oops, we're losing you there. There's something funny in the connection. Every once in a while, we lose you. Are you there? We've lost you entirely. Call him back again and leave me on for while you do that. Okay, we've had a problem with our system this morning. I don't know if you could hear it, but we were losing Carl every once in a while, and now we've just lost him entirely. We will get him back on the line. What we're talking about is the organization Refuse Fascism, and their slogan is, "No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America." And I know at the June 4th protest, there were some members of the organization's branch or, you know, group up in Seattle who came down, and you might have seen those black no stickers. A lot of those got out. I've also seen people using slogans from this organization on their own signs at local demonstrations. But as far as I know, there's no local organizing group here in Portland. There definitely is in Seattle. We're going to get to the topic of November 4th because this organization's got a particular call out for the November 4th time. And are you there, Carl?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, good. Thank you. We lost you for a moment. We were having a little trouble with the phone, and we were joking to ourselves it was a phone tap, but we lost you. We have you back. I've been talking to the audience about the organization and the slogan, "No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America," because we have seen that slogan on protests here in Portland, though I don't believe there is an organizing group here in Portland. And I know that some of the people organizing up in Seattle came down for a big demonstration we had here to stop the fascists who had come into town and wanted to have their, quote, free speech moment. So we were just talking a little bit about that. If you would like to go on.
Let me say this. There is actually a plan for Portland on Saturday, November 4th.
Oh, great.
At 2 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain.
Okay.
And there's a Facebook page for it, but I can't raise Facebook right now, so I can't give people the details off of the Facebook page. They can go to the website refusefascism.org and get the links to the
local
Facebook page for the action in Portland and get in touch with the organizer and get involved. And see, this is very important because we are in an emergency situation. You know, three Muslim travel bans.
The latest attacks on LGBT.
I was going to go through a few of the
nightmares. Go ahead.
But look, the Muslim travel bans, taking away newly won rights from LGBTQ people. A president, we've seen police brutalize and even murder disproportionately black and brown people. And then you have a president who talks about taking the gloves off the police. In other words, they're not brutal enough. The threat to destroy North Korea, the attacks on immigrants, and I could go on and on, and we cannot sit back and say this is acceptable. We can't say it's bad, but we just have to wait for the next time the channels of the system allow us to act on this. We have to take this into our own hands. We're living in a nightmare, and the way out of this nightmare is actually in our hands. We have to act to stop this.
You know,
and that's what Refuse Fascism exists for, and that's what the call for November 4th is, to take to the streets in cities and towns across the country and stay in the streets, protesting day after day and night after night until our one demand is met. This nightmare must end, the Trump-Pence regime must go in the name of humanity. We refuse to accept a fascist America.
And that is the one uniting force for refuse fascism. You don't have to agree on everything else. You don't have to agree on how to, deal with certain issues. You just have to agree fundamentally on that we need to get the Trump-Pence regime out now, that we can't wait for it to consolidate its power and to normalize fascism. And I think it already is beginning to. I wanted to tell you about, I don't know if you'd heard about this one, Carl, but Sessions, the head of the DOJ for the nation, came to Portland to talk to our policemen because we're a quote sanctuary city, and to basically read them the riot act and tell them that they really are going to clamp down hard on sanctuary cities. And then within a few days, they did a raid, part of national raids, where they took 33 of our co-Portlanders and people from our region and arrested them for deportation. To me, that was a very openly fascist kind of act, to have the Attorney General come here and say, we don't care what your laws are about, and we don't care what you feel about immigrants. He was also going against our marijuana law. He said, we don't care what you do. We're going to do it anyway, and we're going to make it even harder for you. Some people think of Trump's bullying as just about his character, but it's not, is it?
No, it's not just about it. It's not a character flaw. It's not just that he has an overblown ego. There is a method to this. I mean, he gets up and he says, I had the biggest inauguration crowd ever, and I would have won the popular vote except 5 million people voted against me illegally. And then he hammers at the media, and he's actually trying to set a new standard for what's true. What is true is what the regime says is true. And this has been done before. And a lot of people get upset when we make analogies to Hitler. But it really is the big lie and telling the big lie again and again and again and bludgeoning those forces in society who refuse to get with that big lie. You know, and the one thing I was going to say, I think I was talking about the football players taking a knee around. And see, it's really important to look at what Trump did with that. First off, here are these people protesting the way that police get away with brutalizing and murdering people. The brutality and murder of the police doesn't upset the regime. What upsets the regime is that these players adopted a very effective form of protest, because by doing that protest, they injected the discussion throughout society. So then Trump declares, well, this is not a protest about the police. This is a protest about the flag and the anthem. These people are not patriotic, and that's not acceptable. And then forces are being forced to line up on that. And the NFL, the owners are lining up. The players are now being coerced to get with it. This is what this regime does, and this is part of the playbook of fascism. But you made a very important point. We're not saying to people that they have to agree with us that it's fascist. We can discuss that. But look at what's happening. Look at the open and naked white supremacy. You know,
we've had repeated, and I think, in fact, last weekend we had the same Christian fascist come again, and he was met again with drowned out. So far, they have not been able to get their message heard beyond a few feet of where they are, because we have been pushing them back very hard here in Portland. But just the seeing of them and the men in Charlottesville with the torches, if we had any question about fascists rising, I think those images should be pretty much it right there. That should scare you. If it doesn't, you're not paying attention. Well, or you're numbed. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've been seeing going on is all this talk about, well, when Trump talks about the NFL, he's just avoiding talking about Puerto Rico. And so he's just, that's Trump tweeting again. And I think we have to be really careful about that. He's tweeting to distract us, but he's also tweeting to create an environment that is pro-fascist politics. And I think that, we can't ignore his tweets, and we do have to pay attention to what he's not telling us as well.
Yeah, and see, we have to do that both about what's happening with the NFL players and about Puerto Rico, because there's also the content of what he tweets about Puerto Rico. He talks about how great the rescue, the effort to rehabilitate and deal with the crisis in Puerto Rico is, without actually getting into the fact that most of the island is without power. It's still the case that about 80% of the people in Puerto Rico do not have electricity and any other forms of power.
Well, and he also openly, as far as I was concerned, he said that the Puerto Ricans are lazy. You won't even take care of yourself.
Yeah. See, that's the thing.
And that kind of racism is insidious.
Yeah, the white supremacy is just oozing out of what he says about Puerto Rico, because it doesn't matter that this island, overwhelmingly made up of black and brown people, is without power. There are people who don't have access to drinkable water. Food is a question for large parts of the island. And with all of this going on, all you hear from him is, I'm doing well in this.
I'm doing okay, really
how
well.
The recovery is. I'm getting compliments.
Right.
More and more people are patting me on the back.
I want to jump in there and say, Dix, his requirement that people praise him, his lining up his cabinet men and making them say something to praise him, and when they don't say enough, he said, you have a little more there. That's as humiliating as anything I've ever seen. And that they are going along with it and doing it is shocking, because, you know, I've seen bad fathers pull that kind of humiliation trick on their children. I babysat for a man who had cut his children's hair so bad there were bare spots and not, and he forced his children to tell me over and over again that they loved their daddy's haircut. The haircut their daddy gave him. He's a lot like that. It's very sick, and it wears people down, and it makes a sort of obsequious bowing to power normal.
Yes, and see, that's the thing. People have to refuse to accept this as normal. I mean, even as you see, and there are forces in society that it works with. I mean, the governor of Puerto Rico very much went with it and said, every time I call the president, he does what I want him to do.
You can see his tail wagging, by the way.
Yeah. The mayor of San Juan, on the other hand, was like, my people are dying here. And essentially she said, I'm not going to kiss Donald Trump's butt. My people are dying, and I'm going to call for the kind of help that they need. And
so, well, Carl, say that we agree. Say that I'm on the page with you. We got to get rid of these guys before they can consolidate more harm. And we do have a list here I can go through. And we are going to have you start calling in now. I should give out the phone number. Audience, wake up. It's your turn to talk, too. It's 503-231-8187. Go ahead and call in with your questions and your comments. But say we agree with you that this really has to get thrown out before more harm can be done. We're also getting inundated by people saying, well, we're just going to have to go with the good Democrats, those ones that are trying to do some good for us. But as we know, Nancy Pelosi and Feinstein and those went along with the Bush regime. They knew about torture. They quickly made a law that any of them and anyone in the government that participated in illegal acts like torture would not be prosecuted. So I think relying on them is not very reliable. But say we agree with you about all of that. How are we going to do this? And how are we going to throw this fascist regime out?
Okay, that's a big question, and let me take it into two parts. The first thing, how do we drive the regime out? Look, the part that's on us is that we have to create a political crisis. That's the point of going to the streets and staying in the streets. One demonstration, no matter how big, is not going to be enough. But if there is enough disruption, if it becomes clear that there's a political crisis that makes it hard for the system to continue functioning in the face of it, then all forces in society will have to act to deal with that political crisis. And we saw this happen in South Korea only a few months ago.
And we're seeing it perhaps in Catalan and Spain.
Yes, also we're seeing it other places. And in Korea, South Korea, it began with the students taking to the streets, some of the more radical elements in society. But they stayed in the streets. They called for others to come forward, brought the church groups into it, brought professional associations, other sections of society. And it reached a point where, in that case, they impeached the president and brought in a new government. We don't have a crystal ball on here's exactly how this should happen, but you're right. We can't allow any forces in the power struggle. We can't rely on them. We have to create a situation where the continued functioning of the system is being disrupted in such a way that even representatives of the system, the capitalist imperialist system, see that they have to do something about this. And see, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, they have a lot of disagreements with Trump in them, but one thing they don't disagree on is keeping the capitalist imperialist system in effect and intact. And that will force them to do something about this disruption that's rooted in the direction that the fascists grouped around Trump are taking things. That's the point to this. Now, that won't be the end of the problems, because all of the horrors that Trump is intensifying preceded him. And in fact, they're rooted in the nature of this capitalist imperialist system. And that's why I'm a revolutionary communist, because we need to get rid of this system. But the revolution has to go through a phase of getting this fascist regime out, because if this regime is allowed to consolidate its power, whatever your progressive vision of the future, whether it's revolution, whether it's some sort of reform or whatever, would be far, 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 far more difficult to accomplish. So everybody who doesn't want to see the nightmare that Donald Trump is become the new normal in this country has to come together to drive this regime out.
Well, on that note,
we're aiming to do and working on here.
All right, Carl, and let's have people call in and talk with you about that as well. Our number here is 503-231-8187. I'd like to hear you, the audience, talk about this. I know you have lots of opinions about how we're going to stop the fascist Trump from what he's doing. I know, because I hear you. So please call us and talk about this particular conversation, this particular organization. And while we're waiting for them to call, and I'll do that number again, it's 503-231-8187. Carl, I want to ask you about right now there are crimes that have been taking place. Right now there are things that have been moving us far to the right. This 33 people that the Sessions just did. So let's talk about immigration and the deal that the Democrats are saying they're going to make for DACA. That deal appears to me to be to allow the government law enforcement to move even more into a militaristic way and to put more DEA and Border Patrol people up into the full interior. To me, it's just armor up more against the people is the deal that the Democrats are saying they're willing to make with Trump to keep DACA kids here. Now, I absolutely want to protect the DACA kids and all of our immigrants to this nation, whether they have documents or not. So it's not that I'm not saying I want us to figure out a way to protect those young people, but I don't think that the way they're going to give us, we have to keep our eyes open. Like you said, the policies of Trump have been here in some form before.
Yeah, I mean, and on the immigration front, like I said before, Barack Obama actually deported more immigrants than any previous president. So we don't want to just go back to the way it was before Trump. But we do have to, and see, it's, we have to keep our eyes open, but we also have to act. You know, we have to actually take to the streets every time one of these attacks comes down, but we can't just respond to the attacks. We actually have to act to drive this regime out, because they are looking at, and Trump is looking at it this way too. He may throw a bone our way in terms of, well, I'll give the DACA people a little more, you know, a little longer time frame or a little more protection. But in return, he wants to unleash ICE even more forcefully against the immigrants.
And they're already pretty forceful here.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I mean. He's not just saying, let me keep going after them. He wants to increase the going after them. And we can't rely on Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to be the defenders of immigrants.
That's right.
Because they were right there with Obama in terms of the stepped up
absolutely
of ICE that Trump is now trying to trump, if you'll excuse the pun.
We have a couple callers on the line.
Okay.
Our first one is Walter. Walter, thanks for calling in.
Yes. I would like to ask your guest, there's a conversation that's starting to pick up steam, I've noticed, and it's something that we've all known from the beginning, and this man is mentally unfit to hold this office. And so there's been just recently a book published, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, compiled essays by very prestigious people in the field of psychology and psychiatry. These conversations are now being reported, these conversations are occurring within his own party. And people I just heard a report yesterday, there's discussions, what if he goes for the button? What if he goes for the nuclear football? We're going to have to physically stop him. So I'm just wondering what part that will play in all this, and is it a thread we should be pulling on?
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, that's a good question. I want to say two things on that. The first thing is that this is a part of the picture, and it may become something around which forces coalesce if there is enough uprising from below to cause a political crisis. That could become the reason that he's removed from office. But we can't make that the linchpin of the case, because, you know, there are scenarios through which Trump disappears and you get Mike Pence.
Yes.
And Mike Pence is in there with Trump on virtually every policy that he has put forward. He just is not, I mean, and in
his
fact,
walking out of the NFL game the other day, or was it an NFL game? And then Trump saying, yeah, and I sent him there. It was like,
yeah, Pence is right with Trump on virtually every policy point coming down, the attacks on immigrants, going after LGBTQ people, you know, unleashing of white supremacy, all of this, the targeting of women. Pence is in there with that. And in particular, Pence is actually a Christian theocrat. Mm-hmm. Trump is aligning with the Christian theocrats and voicing unity with them. But that's very hypocritical, because, you know Donald Trump's history, and it's not Christian theocracy.
That's right.
It's like rich boy hedonism is what Donald Trump actually is in real life. But as far as the mentally unfit, it can be a part of the fabric that comes and wraps around this, but we have to aim to create a political crisis, to take to the streets and stay in the streets beginning on November 4th, protesting day after day, night after night, and bringing forward others, growing from thousands to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands and more, One, because we have to drive this whole regime out, not just one individual. And this individual, on a whole lot of levels, he doesn't fit the criteria for being a human being. Because he doesn't have the humanity. No, he doesn't have
No,
the humanity.
I know. I'm sorry. I laughed just because it was so straight. It was so it was so directly saying something that's true. Yeah, he isn't. We do have another caller on the line. We have John on the line, I believe. And I think we have another caller, so my engineer is busy right now. Okay. But yeah, I agree with you that Donald Trump, and now we can go to John, I believe.
Hello?
Hi, John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I love this conversation. I'll start out really quick that it's going to take more. It's going to take more than just going out to the streets over and over again. And a good example is what's going on with Hollywood and the big Hollywood producers being exposed for their sexism, or like NFL. It's going to have to happen at that level, mainly because there have been too many people turning their backs or blind eye to the injustice at their levels. I mean, let's say you work at the city or at a bank or something like this, and you know for absolute fact that this person is discriminating against this black person, Mexican, Latino, LGBT, and on and on. You see them, but you don't say anything because I'm getting paid my money and I don't want to rock the boat. That level is going to have to be encouraged.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's too many people who turn a blind eye to this injustice. Our alignment as a nation with fascist regimes goes back to Prescott Bush. But what I understand with our country was ready to replace Great Britain as the great European power with Nazi Germany. It's just that it took the wiliness of Winston Churchill to show everyone how ruthless these people were with the sinking of the Lusitania. And then the United States woke up. They went, okay, these Nazis don't play. Okay?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
And Winston Churchill was saying, see, I told you. Now, had it not been for Winston Churchill doing what he did, I wonder how the true United States, you know, from an African American perspective, from a Latino American perspective, from a gay person, the United States has always internally aligned itself with these type of regimes anyway. It's just that it took certain people at their level to say stop.
John, I was wondering, you know, I noticed that at the as this NFL taking the knee has gone forward, and then the, you know, Trump's blowback on tweets and stuff, that at some points in audiences I've seen them boo the players when they joined hands. And I really hate that, but I think it's important. And Carl, I'd like you to weigh in here, because I do think it represents something about how the audience can either be manipulated into believing this is really about do you love America or not. But I don't think it's only that. And I think that we do have to face that we have a kind of racism, the everyday kind that you're talking about, that would rather not be bothered.
Well, I mean, look at what's happening in Hollywood. Okay, that in and of itself is a type of protest. When you see very large celebrity people saying, you know, yeah, this guy did try to rape me. You know, when once upon a time, people like that would have been blackballed and kicked out of Hollywood.
Yes.
Okay, that in and of itself is showing you at that level there is some type of pushback going on, but it's going to have to happen at that level. The streets, they already have a plan for how they're going to squash any type of protest like that. It's at the personal level that people are going to have to make that revolution from within. Until they do, I'm sorry. You know, this thing may have to run its course. And I'll take the rest of your comments off the air. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, John. Carl?
Okay. There are a few things in this. Let me start with this thing of having to get people to stop turning a blind eye to injustice at their level. That is exactly what does need to happen. And people also need to see that the injustice at their level is part of a larger injustice. It isn't just that there's something happening on my job or at my school or in my neighborhood. This is part of a larger thing that we have to deal with here. And it really does have to come to the streets, because it has to become a thing where the functioning of this society gets called into question. Because you have a lot of these top Democrats who have their differences with Trump, but if he can keep the system going, the capitalist imperialist system going, that's their main desire anyway. So they'll put up with it and with their differences with him if he keeps the system going. If the moves that he's making disrupts the system that much because of the resistance, that's the thing that will pull them into, we got to oppose them. And look, in terms of the U.S.-Germany thing that, you know, historically that John was talking about, look, the Nazis studied what the U.S. had done to black people and to indigenous people in the late 19th and early 20th centuries as part of developing what they were going to do to Jewish people in Germany. So it definitely wasn't the case that the U.S. was this progressive society that opposed the Germans because the Germans were a repressive society. And at the same time, when you look at what Great Britain did in places like Kenya or India, they weren't very progressive either.
No.
It was a falling out among thieves. It was like which thief was going to get to rob the whole world. And that's what threw them against each other.
Well, and we see the outfall of that division of the world all over the world right now, whether it's in Myanmar or Korea or in other parts of
that's
Africa.
Still what's going on with now the U.S. being on top of the pile on that. And people here, and that's why we say in the name of humanity, we don't just say, well, as Americans, it's in our interest to do this about Trump. Because it's also humanity. When you have a president who goes to the United Nations and talks about we're going to destroy a country of 25 million people, he's shown willingness to utilize nuclear weapons. Not only would that kill a lot of people in that part of the world, that would affect the environment of the whole planet. He's got a cabinet that's full of climate change deniers.
Yes. Well, you know, we've got some. I'm glad you're getting to that point. I was just looking for my paperwork here because you do list a lot of the crimes of this regime already against
the
environment.
That's a big one of them. And you look at it. We've had Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Jose, Hurricane Maria, all coming through the Caribbean, decimating, just devastating islands there, devastating part of the southeastern U.S.
And then we see that
people tell us, "Don't, it's not time to talk about climate change."
Yeah, you know, and actually, like, we are hearing it more. It's
when
forcing
are you going to talk about it after it's destroyed the ability of humanity to continue to survive?
Maybe if Mar-a-Lago goes down, it'll make a difference. Then we do have a couple more callers on the line. Okay. I believe we have Jeremy on the line. Oh, I believe we have Francis on the line.
Hi,
Francis. Thank you for calling.
Hi. There's a lot of people who are taking a knee with the players, and the fans are, and that is not publicized. I think that I recall Kent State and some other things that happened when Martin Luther King was killed after he started speaking out against the Vietnam War. And I think of COINTELPRO. And I think of now that the FBI has decided that certain, they don't say which ones, but they say black extremist groups are considered possibly perpetrators of violence. It's alarming to me that we are allowing this to happen. And I am concerned because the players are taking a knee because the 14th Amendment has never been upheld. That's the one that provides for equal protection under the law. So when that flag is flying, that's the most appropriate time to take a knee and ask that we acknowledge and respect the rights of people.
I find the photos of them are inspiring.
Right.
And when you see their individual Kaepernick, statements, they're inspiring.
Right. And Colin Kaepernick was advised by a Green Beret to take a knee because he said that was what the Berets do, and it's a more humble and respectful position than standing, actually. And I asked this question the other day, and I really would like to know the answer, and I'm going to research it myself. But we go through this tremendous ritual of having the president, and any public official, actually, but the president of the United States takes an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. What does that mean? This man is violating that Constitution every day, all day. And there's no recourse. There's no repercussions for it.
You know, I heard you ask this question the other day, Francis, I'd like to have Carl weigh in on it, because I don't think that those...
Is it just a ritual? Does it not mean anything that requires someone to take an oath to uphold the Constitution?
Well, I think they obviously, some of them don't mean it ever, but Carl, would you like to weigh in on this issue of...
Is there a repercussion for not...
See, I think that's why we can't...
violating that oath.
We're not going to be able...
You know,
like, could we put them in jail for that or for not doing their oath?
Is there a legal process for that? I mean, I find that all these Republicans and whomever else that knows that this man is out of line and are going along with it because of their own political agendas, they're all culpable, too, because they're letting this happen.
Well, they are. Thank you for that, Francis. I would like
that's
to.
That's a question I would like answered, because I don't know that anyone's ever been held to that oath.
Well, I think you're going to have to research that too, because I'm not an expert on that,
yeah.
And I don't know if Carl is, but I do want to say that I think that what you're trying to raise is really important, which is the normalization of going against how,
people are upset because the players are taking a knee.
What about
that? That the president that is perpetrating their outrage is violating the very thing that they want respected.
Yep, I agree with you. Well, thank you, Francis, for that. We do have another caller. It's Jeremy. Jeremy, you're on there.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I was turning off my speakerphone.
Well, thank you.
This is awkward, but I've known who Carl Pope was for, I don't know, 40 some
Carl
years.
Carl Pope?
Now. Maybe pushing 50. I said known who he was. And I just think it's important for the rest of the audience perhaps to Google the Revolutionary Communist Party before they listen to what he's got to say. His organization has been aligned with one of the great mass murderers of history, Mao Zedong, for a long time. This criticism is from the left. I'm not an anti-communist. I'm an anti-Stalinist.
Well,
and
you know,
I think it's a real disaster that the American left continues not to get the problem with people who believe in the dictatorship of the proletariat and secret police and mass incarceration and the kind of police state you have now in China.
Actually,
that is not a positive vision.
All right. Well, Jeremy, thank you for that, and I'll let Carl answer that as well. But his name is not Carl Pope; it is Carl Dix. Carl, would
I'm
you
sorry,
like to address?
Me. I apologize.
That's all right. Carl, would you like to address what Jeremy's bringing up?
Okay, let me briefly address Jeremy's points. First off, anybody who wants to know what the Revolutionary Communist Party is about should get a book by Bob Avakian called The New Communism, because Bob Avakian is the architect of a new communism, one that is based on and rooted in previous communist societies, but also identifies and works to break through on shortcomings and errors in those. I mean, as far as this thing of Mao Zedong was a mass murderer, just not true. I mean, Mao had an approach of, in terms of struggling with people in Chinese society and in the Chinese, the Communist Party of China, he took an approach of cure the sickness to save the patient, not targeting people, not, you know, executing people, not throwing people out of the party. Now, the regime that exists in China now is the one that came into being after Mao died and after his followers were purged from the party and arrested, and they restored capitalism, and that's what exists in China right now. But people should get that book by Bob Avakian, The New Communism, and read what we're about. And they should also get The Constitution for a Future for a Socialist Republic in North America, which breaks down what a revolutionary society in North America would be like, how it would function, what the government would be like, what the economy would be like, how the rights of the people would be dealt with. And people can find out how to get that by going to the website revcom.us. I also want to go back to Francis's question, because yes, the president takes, there's a ritual of each president taking an oath to defend the Constitution. And to be truthful, there is no president who has ever had any repercussions for massive violation of the Constitution. No, I mean, the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments were passed after the Civil War to give rights to black people. Black people had rights for about 8 years, and then Reconstruction was overthrown, and black people got put back into slavery by another name in violation of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, and not a single president did anything about those violations. Some even championed those violations. Lynching, thousands of black people were lynched after the overthrow of Reconstruction. And when anti-lynching bills came up in Congress, they never even got to the floor for a vote. That's the stand that was being taken on the Constitution, not only by the president, but the senators and representatives.
And I believe Woodrow Wilson, when he came back from World War II, didn't he resegregate the White House and everything else?
And the federal government. And the federal government, because a lot of black people had government jobs and they were pushed out.
Yep. Well, thank you for
Franklin Roosevelt also, the New Deal, a lot of it was Jim Crow. You know, the housing that was put together for people and different things. Black people weren't allowed to get into that. So there has been no repercussions for that. And that's why we can't rely on the mechanisms of this system. I mean, there was an impeachment process begun against Nixon, which factored into his resignation, but it wasn't that he had violated the Constitution, even though he had.
No.
It was that there was so much opposition to him in society that they moved to get rid of him to kind of cool out that opposition. We have to bring forward the kind of opposition that can't be easily cooled out by one resignation or deciding that one individual is unfit. We have to actually target a regime that is not in the interest of humanity.
And you know, if people wanted, I agree with you, and if people wanted to rely on the Democrats, why haven't they moved to do something about paying so many millions of dollars directly to the Trump family for the use of his property because he demanded to stay there instead of in the White House? I mean, they have a million ways right now to try, you know, to appeal to the American public that this is a criminal, that he's taking criminal action, and that they need to push him out. And they're not even going to try to go there because they don't want it to be turned on themselves. You know, these long-term Democratic Party people, they have their own list of crimes and their own not following their oaths. I really want to thank you, Carl, for joining us. We have another caller, but I don't believe we have the time. I've been speaking with Carl Dix. He's one of the initiators of the Refuse Fascism in the Name of Humanity. I want to read that slogan properly. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And on November 4th, there's going to be actions in many cities around the country. Can you just say a last word about that, Carl?
Yeah, I just wanted to end on that. because on November, we have to refuse to accept a fascist America. And on November 4th, it begins. People need to take to the streets and cities across the country and stay in the streets, protesting day after day and night after night, not stopping till our demand is met. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. And people should go to the website, refusefascism.org.
It has so many tools and so many easily usable fact sheets, et cetera. It's really a good site for that kind of information.
And in Portland, Saturday, November 4th, 2 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain. That's where it begins in Portland. But go to the website, get more information, get the materials, the fact sheets, the nightmares, because we have 10 of the nightmares that the Trump regime concentrates. And there are different things you could use to make those nightmares into flyers or even sandwich boards. We've been going to the headquarters of Fox News with them here in New York.
That's great. And
it's really eye-opening to people when they see, yeah, they are doing that.
I do recommend that people check you and Cornel West on with Bill O'Reilly. They can go to YouTube, Carl Dixon, Cornel West on Bill O'Reilly. I want to thank you again, Cornel West of the refusefascism.org. That's the website. And I want to thank all of our listeners and our callers. John, I'm sorry we didn't have enough time to get you on. And I want to thank Tammy, our engineer, as always, for making this effortless for us. And goodbye to all of you.
Thank you for having me on, Linda.
It's 10:02. No, it's not. It's 10:00, and you're tuned to KBOO Portland. And if you didn't know it by now, KBOO keeps you informed. And you can get involved. This is community radio, folks. Go to kboo.fm and click on donate if you'd like to become a member of this great station that brings you wonderful conversations. We're going to go to Flashpoints in just a minute. And then at 10:15 or